Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
Hey, it's the President of the United States of America, in particular Jason, who's in charge of all the drumming. You're listening to Used Wigs Radio on a podcast, which is like radio, but more current and better. Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Used Wigs Radio, podcast number 62. Tonight, the boys and I are having a spray tan party to celebrate the lovely weather we're having here in Philadelphia. We have Mario from Tantastic Salon to help us out. He'll be spraying us down. He has a garden hose attached to a giant container of Bronzonium 462. Little concerned, it has a small hazmat sticker on it, boys. What do you think of that?
No, that's the good stuff.
Oh, it is? Okay. I was going to say, if it wasn't like lethal or semi-toxic, it wouldn't really work. It wouldn't have that stick-to-itiveness that lasts.
That's right.
Because, you know, years past when I get spray tan at the beginning of the season, sometimes you go in the shower like 3 days later and it's gone. But this is guaranteed to last. It looks like it says 4 to 6 months.
Nice.
It goes well with that Brazilian beer you're drinking.
It is. Yes, Russ. Good point. We're going to look Brazilian. Why not drink a Brazilian beer? And this is Xingu. X-I-N-G-U black beer. Russ, where'd you get it?
I got it in Maryland.
It's funny because it's imported by a Maryland company, Eurobrew.
Oh, that could be why.
From Ashland, Maryland.
But we'll be Brazilian inside and
out. Don't tell anybody that I transported beer across state lines, please.
I've done it.
Have you guys ever tanned? Have you ever spray tanned or been in a booth?
I've never tanned naturally.
I've never been tanned.
No, I go completely for a guy who grew up at the beach and supposed to be kind of a beach guy. I go from extremely pale and freckly and pasty to like red, crisp, danger, melanoma level.
I'm surprised that like when tanning got big, I guess in the 80s or the early right. 90s, that you didn't take a shot at this. This spring, I'm going to gear up the right way. I'm going to go 1 minute for a month, and then 2 minutes, and then 3 minutes, graduate to 4 minutes, and then I'll be, no, you've never even tried that? Because for a while, when they first came out, doctors were kind of recommending that fair-skinned people like yourself would actually gear up for the sun season in a booth.
Let me guess, Todd, you've never had to pre-tan. Like, let's say you're going to Cabo, going to party down, one of your trips, and you're like, oh, I need to pre-tan before I go. Have you ever said that?
No, I have. I pre-tanned once because, we got married in Mexico.
That's so...
Yeah, I just don't think that I would ever hang out with somebody who would say something like, oh, I need to pre-tan because I'm going to Cabo.
Let me tell you why I did. I mean, you can reject or embrace it.
Did they trim your eyebrows down and everything for you?
I actually did. I got sheared as well.
I was going to say.
I got my back sheared.
Hey, Todd's like looking at the board of the tent. It's like, Guido package number 3. They will give you...
I'll take the Dominic.
The Dominic?
The hot Dominic.
The hot Dom.
But no, we got married in Mexico.
And it's undercoating too?
And
I'm sorry.
We just didn't want to get burnt. So Heather and I both, just so we didn't get burnt for the wedding and for the photographs, we went a little bit. And it was a pretty terrible experience though. I mean, it's boring and weird. And I felt dirty, going in. I was almost embarrassed. Like, I would think, all right, if I go at this time, probably no one will see me come or go out of the salon.
What
else?
There's
the fake beard.
Did you tan together?
No.
You lay.
But
there,
I did get one of those little heart stickers and put it on a bikini area.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
You can see.
Excellent.
No, I was just wondering because I just read an article in the paper today about women having spray tan parties, and it just looked atrocious.
Parties where they spray each other down?
Yeah, where they all get together instead of having like a book club thing. They bring someone from a salon. And they stand against like a giant kiddie pool, and literally this guy with a hose or woman just sprays them, and they pretend they enjoy it.
They should just put the tanning stuff in a kiddie pool and wrestle, and then sell admission to offset the cost of the spraying stuff.
I like it. No, but with the onset of the nice weather, finally, guys, we've had rainy, horrible weather. You get to thinking about fun stuff like nice weather, summer plans, all that good stuff, and. I know we probably talked about this in years past, but just to get the ball rolling, summer talk, best summer job ever, real quick. best summer job ever? Have you ever had a good summer job, or was it all just a hey, someone's calling up with best summer job ever. Hey, Jeff, this is Jerry from Bensalem. Yeah, my best job, I was a grave digger in Bensalem, and it was fun because once we discovered a body that wasn't fully buried, and the guys and I, we had a few, let me tell you, and we threw it in the back of the car, and okay, Jerry, we're going to have to let you go. Good story. call back.
I never had a summer. Oh, well, get this, you'll appreciate this. So I never had a summer job that I liked, right? One year, there was a listing in our local paper for a video game tester. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm all right, over this. Right. So I called them. It was the summer before I was going to grad school, right? So I called them. They were all set. I was going down there. But this was a job. It was not just a summer job. It was like an indefinite job. So I had to tell them, I'm home for good. Like I just graduated from college. I'd love to be a tester for video games. They were like, that sounds great. All right, we'll give you a call back in a couple of days.
What did that pay?
It wasn't much, but it was as good as any of my other summer jobs would be. So I was like, this will be awesome. I'll spend my summer testing video games. And like most of the jobs I had in the summer, I would tell them at the beginning, yeah, I'm around for good. And then August, I'd be like, I'm out of here. And like they were really upset. So anyway, I was all psyched. Well, they call back to the house, and my dad answers the phone. Well, and and I can't fault him for this because he was like such a proud father and everything. So he gets on the phone and, hello? And they say who they are. Oh, that's great. Yeah, he's really interested in that job. And, he's a smart guy. You'll love having him on your staff because, he's going to grad school in September. I wasn't home. And then my dad was like, hey, those guys from blah, blah, blah called. I said, yeah, what's the next step? He's like, I'm not really sure, but, well, and then he told me the conversation. And after I said that, they were like, oh, he is? All right, we'll have to get back to you. I was so pissed. I was yelling at him. Wow. Dad, you ruined it.
Do you think it really was a video game? You video game tester, because that just sounds too good to be true.
No, it probably was like selling knives.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because I also answered that one time.
They're like, have you ever inseminated a bull?
My family still makes fun of me about this.
For Cutco knives?
No, because there was a thing in the local paper that said, do you like music, money, and fun? And I was like, yes. And I went down to go see what it was, and it was selling knives.
Yeah, Cutco knives.
How is this music, money, and fun?
And how does anyone who replies to that ad stick around and actually become a knife salesman?
Well, the best part about it was then, so everybody comes in and you're sitting in the big room, and then they one by one they filter you through this back room to talk with the manager.
Yes.
And then after that happens, half of the people, they tell them to go home. And then the other half, they keep you there, and you're like the really elite. So I happen to be one of the people they said to stay, and there was maybe 20 of us left.
Do you think that they actually stack the people coming in and they dismiss them?
Could be. Seems like
Yeah.
But anyway, I didn't even know what it was yet. And then they were like, okay, we narrowed it down to U20 because you really had a good conversation with you, and now we're going to let you in on what we're doing. And here it is. And he unfolds like his little tool belt thing with knives in it.
Yeah.
And starts cutting through leather and stuff. And I was like, are you kidding me? So everybody else is sitting there probably equally shocked, but they sat through it. I stood up. And I was like in the fifth row, and I walked out, and he stopped. Oh, I think he did. I think we had names there. He was like, Russ, where are you going? And I was like, I'm not doing this. This is selling knives. That's what this was for. And I was really calling him out on it. And he was, it was this real back and forth. I just got up and walked out, and he was like shocked because I think most people stay.
Yeah.
I mean, my sister-in-law did end up selling the knives. She sat through it.
Yeah, I had two friends. Two friends did it for the summer. Sold knives. Todd, have you ever had? You sold cars, right?
I sold cars. Yeah. So one of my summer jobs was selling new cars, and that was actually a pretty good gig for a college kid. And I learned a lot about buying cars and the kind of seeing how the sausages are made. So like I think for a lifetime, I'll have a better understanding for buying things that are negotiable. But the interesting part is, on a test drive, we totaled a car, a brand new car, totaled. Can you imagine going out on a test drive and like it had to get towed back to the lot? Not only was it totaled, like from the middle to the front was basically just in shambles.
But you didn't get hurt?
No, the airbags deployed. We walked away from it. Then the car caught on fire. It like exploded. So the car gets towed back to the lot. And it was just detailed. So, like, from the middle back, it's got the sticker in the window. It's shiny, brand new. And from the middle forward, it looks like it was in an apocalypse, you know? It's all gutted and torn apart and smashed and burnt. So I'll never forget that.
And you're like,
Jeffy?
Actually, my best summer job was there was a Teamster strike. So I worked for 2 summers delivering beer, and I used to drive giant beer trucks. You'd load the bays in the morning with forklifts. You'd get your docket of what goes where, and we'd drive these trucks out. Very similar to you, Todd. We had no training. They just gave us these giant trucks, and we just took them out. And I destroyed a Monument Park bench. I just backed right over it, almost ran over people. I actually got my front fender of the giant truck. I was pulling into a side street, backed out, and the fender caught the fender of a car this way, and it pulled my front fender of the truck out straight like a unicorn, about 4 feet out. So I went driving back into the warehouse, and like all work stopped. They just see this truck pull in with this giant metal fender coming straight out, like it would scoop up people. If I turned a corner, I could scoop up people crossing the street, like this giant monster of a. And then during that summer, I also I had 72 cases of beer on a forklift. Another guy had 72 cases of beer on a forklift, and we crashed into each other head on and destroyed 144 cases of bottled beer.
Wow.
Took us about 6 hours to clean it up.
Wow. I have a good friend.
Good times.
Summer story. Who shares what I think to be a hysterical summer story is he and another guy were hired to be, when they were in high school, to be laborers, and they got a power washer in their hands, the first thing they had to do, first morning was like to clean a chimney with this power washer. So they're both standing down there and they don't know how to use it or what to do with it, but they turn it on and they had it on way too high. They're standing on the ground and they turn it on and it knocks the
brick out.
It knocks the bricks out of the top of the chimney down the other side of the house. And they look at each other, and this is my favorite part, and the other guy he just was introduced to, but they look at each other, and the other guy just runs and never came back. Like, didn't have a ride. And was probably dropped off there. Just ran away through the development into the neighborhood.
Man, I got a good story like that, but we got to play music first.
Why don't I play something to kick off the show? This is a band I just discovered, and I really like them. Name of the band is Ice Palace, and this song is called Thoughts Facts.
Let's put the facts away inside my head. Locked up safe from all of you. Let's put the facts away inside my head and roll them up to heaven, don't you know? 'Cause you might leave me tomorrow. Leave me all alone. Or we might pull this off together. Just have to see how things go. Precious space where I used to think. Thank God for that. You're lonely with me tomorrow. I won't ever be alone. We're gonna pull this off together. Go.
And we're back, people. That lovely song was called Thoughts Facts by Ice Palace. You can check Ice Palace at icepalacetheband.com, and that's off their new album called Wonder Subtly Crushing Us. Again, Ice Palace. Check them out. Todd, I love the idea that your friend just took the cartoon way out, just ran.
No, well,
you know, just my, like the little cloud of dust. Right, right, right. Like a little cloud of dust, he just runs. Well, and gone.
The one summer that I wasn't sure what I was going to do, I went back and worked all my previous summer jobs again. Like people that I had worked with before. I'm like, hey, maybe I'll come back and work with you again.
Like a greatest hits?
Yeah, it was. It was like a greatest hits summer.
Greatest hits.
And each one that I did, I got on the job, and literally I was there for an hour. And like, so I went up, I was like, yeah, landscaping wasn't so bad. I was outside all day. I went back. We did one lawn, and then I took the mower. I rode it back into the truck, and I said, "Okay, guys." And they were like, "Wait!" And we were up on Jericho Turnpike, like 45 minutes from my house. They were like, "But we drove all the way up here. Like, don't you want to finish the day?" I was like, "Nope." They said, "Well, how are you going to get home?" I was like, "I'll just call my brother. I'm out of here. I hate this." And so I left. And then same thing. I went back to a deli, and I started working there. And it was about 11:30, and it started getting crazy for lunch, and people are coming in screaming at me to cut my liverwurst really thinner than that. And I was like, oh yeah, I hate this too. And so I stayed for the lunch rush, and as soon as that was over, I took my apron off, I folded it, and I handed it to the owner. I said, okay, I'm going to get out of here. He was like, what do you mean? I said, yeah, I don't like this. I remember now. He's like, well, don't you want to finish up the day? I said, no. And he said, do you want to get paid for the day? I said, let's just pretend you never saw it. And I just walked out.
Do you know, Todd, this is all in one day.
Yeah. So it was a couple. It was very close.
During a montage.
During a montage.
But the story I was going to tell was earlier when I was working for a landscaper, I had those big skag mowers that you ride on. But you couldn't ride on these. Like, they were the walk behind.
Yep.
We just didn't have the attachment to ride. So anyway, he had had it for so long that the rubber handles on the handles were gone, so it was just pipes. So you held these pipes, and then you used like the grip things to maneuver it.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're working at this one guy's house. He's got a pristine 79 Monte Carlo in the driveway, and it's perfect. Like, it's his prize car. So I got to take this skag into the backyard past his car. So the only way that you can make these things move is by letting go of the handles, right? And depending on which one you let go, if you let go of one side, it goes to that side.
Yeah, just like rowing with one oar.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so it only stays still when you're gripping both handles closed. If you let go of both, it just takes off. You let go of one, it goes right to that side. So I'm very, very carefully there's a space only the size of the mower between the car and the house, and I'm very carefully just like brr, brr. Like, just make it, letting it go by, right? Well, one of the back wheels gets hung up on a brick that's, like, on the ground, you know, kind of bordering his garden. And it makes the thing jump to the side. I lose grip on the one side, and the thing just spun around towards the house. So it wasn't going towards the car, but it went towards the house, and the open metal pipe just went all down the door.
Of
the car. And I'm talking, like, a quarter of an inch deep. It was a gash.
What do you do?
What'd you do?
Oh, and look, so right away my stomach just sinks. I'm like, great, the whole rest of the summer I'm gonna be working off this stupid car. But then what could I do? He was my next door neighbor. It wasn't like I could run away. So I finished off the yard, and then when we were done, I was like, Andy, here's what I did. And actually I gotta give him credit, he was such an awesome guy. He didn't even take it out of my pay.
Wow.
He went up and told the guy, and we ended up cutting that guy's lawn for free for the next, at least the rest of that summer.
Holy
And he
shit.
Didn't take it out of my pay. It was,
wow.
Yeah, it was real. But man, what about a sinking feeling?
The worst 20 minutes ever, Russ trying to finish that lawn. Just be like, I'm doing a good job this lawn. Can't wait to end it and have to deal with that.
Well, those things are strong. Like, I saw him.
Oh yeah, I used to.
I saw him lose a grip one time, and it went through a fence.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like they're crazy.
Awesome.
Okay, so we didn't talk at all about what this show is about and our guests.
Oh yeah, we had a lot to talk about. I don't know. I went on a real horrible path there, but you know, summer fun nonsense. I will just run down quickly three things. We have two amazing interviews tonight that Todd did.
Oh shucks, thanks.
Well, it's not so much that you did them. We could have sent out Chimp, you know, with a tape recorder. Not an actual chip.
For the one interview, that would have been a significant step up because of the tape recorder.
Todd interviewed Beirut, the band. Very, very popular band. And you interviewed the main Beirut person.
The man. Yeah,
the man, Zach. And we also interviewed presidents of the United States who are back in action, right?
I don't know. Well, yeah, they were on hold for a while due to, like, child having and bringing up kids.
And now they're back.
So yeah, and they're back all right.
And then after that, we'll talk about
the first
Used Wigs live entertainment show.
Holy crap.
Yes, June 12th at Milk Boy in Ardmore. We'll be putting on a live show, so you can come out and touch us while we do our show. It'll be fantastic. Free touching.
It's all happening.
Somewhere in space, this may all be happening right now.
It's all happening at the zoo. Todd, shall we talk about get ready for the Beirut?
Beirut, okay. I was very proud to get this interview.
Yeah.
It's very rare for him to grant an interview. And, Beirut is basically the one fella.
Mm-hmm.
And although he performs...
Does he do some hollering?
He performs with a full band, but he is a mastermind, and he records under that name Beirut, just similar to kind of Cat Power or Bright Eyes, like you hear me mention in the interview. But it was very rare because his handlers, as soon as I requested the interview, they wrote back, "Hey, would you be interested in interviewing the tuba player? You know, that's probably a lot more likely."
Right.
And then I of course wrote back, "No, if I can't get the man himself, then you know I understand and right. I appreciate that, but thanks anyway." And they wrote back like, "Well, you're in luck. Normally he never does anything like that." And maybe they were just yanking my chain and made me feel like I had like a really exclusive interview. But the impression I got was that it was very rare for him to sit down with somebody, and the person kind of told me maybe 3 or 4 times via email, it can only be for 8 minutes or 10 minutes. He's very polite, and he'll never cut you short. But and you can't take photographs backstage, and when I first read those messages, I thought that it was kind of a very elitist kind of attitude. I thought I was dealing with someone who thought that they were too good to be interviewed. But after I met him and spoke with him, I didn't get that impression at all. He was a very, very kind guy. You'll hear on the interview. But more importantly, I don't think it's because he thinks he's too big or too good. I think that he's just not comfortable talking about his music. You know, he lets the music do the talking typically. So that's why I think it's an anomaly for him to sit down and chat. So right. I felt like it was a kind of a rare thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it went well.
So shall we take a listen?
You be the judge.
All right. Well, you know, we will be the judge. We're going to be real harsh on you this time, Todd. Pretty much all your interviews have been pretty top-notch.
Give me notes at the end, like a director would do when they do the dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Let's listen.
Well, first, let's hear a song. Let's play Nantes by Beirut.
And what?
Here's how it's spelled. Nantes. It is, I believe, a French city, and I don't know how to say it correctly.
Nantes.
And this is actually one that I selected from a live session called the Black Session Studio 104, and it might give you a clearer picture as to what he sounds like live.
Fantastic.
Let me take you there.
Well, it's been a long time now since I've seen your smile, and I'll gamble away my fright. Oh, I'll gamble away my time, and in a year or a year or so, this will step into the sea. But it's been a long time now since I've seen you smile. Another night in the
your smile. It's a hard gamble away, my friends. Oh, a hard gamble away, my time. It's in a year or a year or so. This will step into the sea. But it's been a long time, a long time now, since I've seen.
This is Todd Marone reporting for Used Wigs Radio at the Electric Factory in Philadelphia, and I am sitting with Zach Condon, a.k.a. Beirut. Zach, you are a fellow American, but you have been taking my ears on a vacation for the last couple of years, seemingly all over the place, but especially, like, sounds like Middle Europe, and due in no small part to the instrumentation and the instruments that you choose, from accordion and mandolin and glockenspiel. Tell me a little bit about the instrument selection, and are there any instruments that were too exotic for American ears, that, you know, you don't like, too polarizing?
I mean, I think I would only not use an instrument if it was too exotic for my own ears, besides the fact that the instruments that get truly exotic are the ones that you couldn't play in a million years unless you grew up with it. So I grew up playing trumpet, so that was an obvious choice. I quit for many years until, like, after high school, after I dropped out, and so I just brought the brass along with me. And one of the early reasons that there wasn't guitar, it's not the main reason at all, but one of the early reasons was I kind of smashed my wrist to bits, and I can't exactly reach around a guitar neck anymore, not very well, at least. So I don't know, I don't consider them that unusual. Maybe it was a few years ago, but now I think people are kind of over the novelty of it, and that's a good thing, actually.
Yeah, and what is the response been, if any, to, like, traditional Baltic musicians? I mean, have you ever felt like they felt like this American was hijacking their sound, or have they been very excited about the fact that you were kind of injecting the sound into American indie music?
Half and half. I've played with a few, really, like, my favorite band of all is Kochani Orchestra, and they're from Macedonia, and I got to play with them in Paris, and they were just amazing about it. And actually, when I was in Australia, I helped translate for Tariff de Haiducs, because they only speak French, not English. But yeah, there's also a lot of people that are, I don't know, it's funny, I've actually gotten shit from, like, club DJs who play house-infused, or Balkan-infused house, I don't know what you would call it.
And they're literally hijacking the music. I mean, they're sampling it, but they feel like you have no right.
Yeah, yeah, and I can totally understand where they're coming from. The last thing you want to, you know, root for the underdog, usually. But I feel like there's such a continuity in the music that's really just me writing pop songs. Perhaps some of the instruments or melodies are slightly exotic, but all in all, it's American music, you know. I'm not lying to myself, I guess.
Yeah, and it's kind of well documented that the reason, or one of the reasons perhaps, is you spent your kind of teenage formative music years in Europe and in France. How would your music, do you think, differ if during those formative years you were here in Philadelphia or somewhere on the East Coast? I mean, if that's what you consumed and kind of regurgitated as opposed to your actual influences?
I have no idea, actually. I'm trying to think if... I remember feeling... There was a hardcore scene in Santa Fe. I know there's one here and in D.C., but, like, I just couldn't be a part of it for some reason. I don't know what it was, but I never joined any punk rock bands when I was a kid, and maybe I'm missing out, but I bet you it would just be... Actually, I have no idea. I'm not even going to venture a guess.
There have been two major trends in the last couple of years that I've noticed as kind of a...
I know what it would have been.
Oh, good.
Play it on. It would have been lounge music, I think.
So you perhaps we averted...
A crisis?
Yeah, Beirut crisis. And speaking of, the two major trends that I've been seeing last couple of years is bands using kind of seemingly
random geographic locations as their name, and individuals naming themselves as bands, and you kind of, you know, both of those things kind of converge with you being your nomenclature Beirut. Talk to me about that decision.
Well, first of all, I thought it was kind of catchy, actually, and that angers some people too. But no, actually, it's kind of a long story. I'll try and keep it short. But when I first started writing songs, I would name everything a city name. Every single track on the album would be a city name. The album name would be a city name, and therefore the band name had to be a city name as well. I'm not entirely sure where that came from, but I have my personal guesses. I'll leave that to anyone else to figure out. But eventually Beirut just stuck, because I think that's when I got to Gulag Orchestra. So, and that was the first record.
So that was one of many kind of recording names that you are using.
I think I almost used Bilbao, I think. Yeah, that was the one I got really close. Oh, and then Pompeii, of course, was the other one that I was seriously considering.
Yeah, but you were never, it was never on the table to record under your own given name.
I never liked my given name.
Yeah. But I think that's a really interesting trend, and for the same reason that there's a certain flavor that, you know, naming a band kind of brings it, I think an individual recording under, you know, whether it be Cat Power or Bright Eyes or Beirut.
I think actually when I was young, my voice was always pretty baritone and deep, and I remember somebody who didn't know me, a friend showed it to them, and they said, oh, who is this, like a balding 30-year-old fat man? And they said, no, it's this, you know, it's this scrawny little 16-year-old who, like, hangs out at the skate park. And, you know, I think I wanted to be taken seriously, even though a lot of the things in my life at the time would call for not being taken seriously. So I wanted to hide behind something big and important sounding, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, and I think that gives some insight. I'm thrilled about it. It's my first time to watch you live, so I'm thrilled about the show, and really looking forward to it. So I'm going to let you go. I know you have plenty to do to set up. So thanks again for your time.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Time may give you more than your poor bones could ever take. My Rebecca said she knew I'd want a boy, a dollar for my boardwalk red balloon to float away. She would earn a pocket full to buy me more.
And we're back, people. That was Iron and Wine with Belated Promise Ring from their new CD coming out May 19th called Around the Well. We love Iron and Wine.
Yeah, and that's the same kind of deal, right? It's mainly that one guy?
Yeah, it's mainly it's Sam Shepard. He does, he's been in a lot of movies, directs, writes. He's older. He's like, you know, 60-something. And he's also singing like songs like
Billy Bob. I can't keep everybody's name straight.
It's all right. Sam Beam, his name is Samuel Beam. It's one guy. Very similar to Beirut, you know? Speaking of Beirut.
Nice job, Tommy. It does seem like a real good guy.
Yeah, I was very appreciative of his time.
What's his name?
Zach Condon. But you know him better as Beirut.
Yes. Of course we do. A lot of Beirut fans out there. And did you enjoy the Beirut show?
Oh, the show was phenomenal.
Really?
And you know what? It was at the music venue that I liked the least in Philadelphia. The Electric Factory. And I hate to pick on... I don't hate to pick on them. They deserve it. But he sounded great. He sounded great. And I don't know if it's because he has a phenomenal crew or tech guy who got things right. But the instrumentation was incredible. All the instruments were really exotic. And
well, it probably wasn't a very loud show, right?
Well, you know, that's probably what it is.
Because I think shows suffer there.
Yeah, it felt more intimate. I mean, it's a giant cavernous space, but you really felt like you were right there, very close.
But how was it, like, just with a nice flimsy plastic a cup of a Miller Lite in your hand?
Of course, I have problems with their beer selection also.
I think you were drinking Bud because it's drinkable, right?
Because of its drinkability. But it's funny because he really did sound great that night, and especially for Electric Factory. And it might be of maybe the 50 shows I've seen in my life, Electric Factory, the first time I ever heard lyrics.
Right.
You know, usually it's a... You know, this is an echoey, terrible, garbled mess.
Yeah.
So, it was a wonderful show.
Is it better than, like,
catch,
you know...
Catch him, catch them, catch it.
Right. Like, you've seen Rusted Root there a lot, right? Wasn't that your band? Band you like to... I'm kidding, of course. Hey, speaking of, we like to pick on Electric Factory as just being a horrible place. Where's the best place around here that you like to see a band?
Well, Johnny Brennan.
Yeah, it is.
World Cafe Live is up there.
There you go. All right, Tin Angel, sure. But, like, a bigger venue. Like, TLA is pretty decent.
TLA is fine. The Truck's fine.
Yeah.
Truck's fine. I like the Truck.
I'll take the Truck over Electric Factory any day.
Yes, that is true. But, first of all, the balcony seating is really painful.
Oh, at the Truck?
Your back is just destroyed.
Yeah.
So you either stand or you wreck your back. And the sound is a little muddy in there.
What was your favorite place?
The Man? Are you guys fans of The Man?
I like The Man.
Man Music Center?
Yeah.
But only when you're down under the awning, because outside of that, it loses something.
Hey, if you're in Philly, people, a wonderful thing to do is, like, Wednesdays and Thursday nights, go see the Philadelphia Orchestra at The Man during the week. Before pre-kids, Kelly and I used to go for, like, 5 summers in a row. You just pack a little meal, bring some wine, get lawn seats, and you just listen to the orchestra, lie on your backs, look at the stars. Make out, maybe grab a little ass. It's fun.
There are, and there's those concerts under the stars in both. There's one in Bryn Mawr and there's one in King of Prussia.
That's right, there is.
The King of Prussia ones are on Sunday nights. The Bryn Mawrs are on Saturday.
Yeah.
We're going to go check out Steve Forbert on a Saturday.
Steve Forbert's playing where?
He's playing in Bryn Mawr on one of those Saturdays. I'll tell you what the date.
Leave me in the middle of the night. Let me hear you say everything's all right. Let me bring you southern kisses.
I'll give you $20 if you can sing another song of his.
Why would I want to? He better do that song 3 times. He better open with it. He better do it in the middle, like an extended version. And he better close with a gospel choir behind him.
Do you even know
what
the name of it is?
It's Jessica.
It's like the ballad of...
I don't think he says it in the song anywhere. It's Romeo's tune.
Romeo's tune. Very nice.
Speaking of live music, you know what's a great place to see on the main line to see live music?
Where would that be?
Milk Boy.
What?
Oh, my gosh.
And we will be, like Jeff said, we'll, for the first time probably ever. There's never been a podcast to ever do this.
That's true. There isn't.
I'm saying that. that we're going to do a live show, a live stage show with live music, live comedy, hijinks, free artwork.
Free giveaways, books.
It's going to streamline. And if you can't make it there, which is preposterous. I mean, if you live in America and you download this, you drive there. But if you can't, for whatever reason, you're an overseas listener, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. The troops.
We know that there's somebody in New Zealand wearing a shirt of ours.
Yeah, it's true.
Awesome. Yeah. So that guy could stream it live. It's going to be on their website. We're going to have links everywhere from all of the Usewig sites.
Yes.
And we'll bombard you with email coming up. But
yes. Stay tuned. My Twitter friend, Guy, who's a developer for Yahoo, German fella in London, he could probably watch the feed. That would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's June 12th, and we're going to post details on that. By the time this goes live, we'll probably have the whole slate, the entertainment, the comedian, special guest, and the usual Usewigs hijinks. You know, we're going to have pretty much what we do here live, have a couch, be a little talk show vibe.
Have the whole extended family there.
Yes.
People like Crazy Aaron.
Yes.
Like Michelle Melcher.
Yes.
Like Lisa doing the announcements.
Yes.
Like Jendek Phil.
Jendek Phil.
It's going to be unbelievable.
It'll be fantastic. And I'm getting my suit pressed. I'm very excited for it. It's going to be a...
You have a suit?
Yeah, I have a suit, and I'll be wearing it. Because it's a very fancy talk show format we're doing. So, look out for that. I'm looking at our big list of things to do. Todd, we have actually another interview for tonight's show.
All right, let's do this.
Let's do it.
Well, this is the President of the United States of America, and this was a really big honor for me too, because I've been a huge fan of theirs for a long time. They burst onto the scene with Lump and Peaches back in the 90s, and then they went away for a little bit. Like I said, the lead guy, Chris, he took some time off to raise his kids. Now they're back on the road with an awesome new album, by the way. And they played a lot of the new stuff, and they have a ball on stage. The show was high energy. They're hysterical. They have a great rapport with the crowd. And I think you really get that in the interview. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the interview. There are three of them, and I'm back there standing in the green room at the truck, and they are sitting all around me. Like, they're not sitting anywhere near each other. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, I guess I'll, like, you know, they didn't cluster up, so as I walked in, and so, but very, very nice guys. I introduced myself, and I take out my iPhone, which is pretty unimpressive when you're going to interview someone, but the software that we have, and you would agree, Russ the sound engineer is nodding his head yes, that it sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I basically tell them the same thing. I was like, you know what, guys, don't be underwhelmed. This is a phenomenal piece of software, and I'm standing there like I'm trying to sell it. I'm looking like I'm changing my view to all three of them, and then the one guy's like, I have that same piece of software, and so we have like an inappropriately long 5-minute conversation about how this is actually going to be just fine. And then I try to fire it up, and my battery on my phone is dead. Now, I don't mention this to them, but I did you ever not know what you know? This is a good example, just like the guy who ran into the neighborhood after knocking the bricks off the fire.
Sure,
it crossed my mind to pretend like I passed out and just fall down on the ground.
Yes.
Because I didn't know what else to do.
That's all right. Option number one. Right.
By an ambulance and be like, oh, he's such a trooper. Oh, the poor guy. Like, maybe they would even dedicate the show to me. But my options were like, so then.
Show gets out to young Todd Marone and just couldn't make it through the night, guys.
So I seriously crossed my mind to pretend like a. And then I thought, like, that's not feasible. I'm an adult, and that's not feasible. You don't just fall down the ground. So then my next thought was.
I'm an adult.
My next thought was just wait until this. Because it was just telling me low battery and it couldn't do that function.
Wait
till the screen goes black and then just proceed to interview them with a dead phone.
Yeah.
Because. You know,
what I would do.
So that's what I was ready to do. So I'm just kind of sitting there in what felt like an eternity with three guys in three different parts of the room sitting down looking at me. I'm actually standing, rather. And then I actually had a pal with me, Kevin, and he could tell that something was wrong, and he hands me his phone, which he already set up to record.
Wow.
And I just grabbed it and started the interview.
What's your friend's full name?
This is Kevin Ginsberg.
Oh, Kevin. Shout out to Kevin Ginsberg.
Yeah. Now.
He saved the day.
That's... And we're lucky to get the interview because I thought those guys
See, I'm torn because I'm glad you got the interview.
You would rather...
I would have rather just seen you either completely fall down or completely just get caught in the middle where you're interviewing them without any sort of recording device that's working and your hand just kind of turns and the one guy goes, hey, that's not even on. What's going on here? You're not. And all of a sudden, Todd just goes, and just like tears out of the room. And then he go, let's get him. And then you have the President of the United States, like, in a wacky video moment, just chasing Todd throughout the whole venue, and, like, music's playing, like...
You see the hall with all the doors.
Right.
Betty Hill, yeah.
Right, different outfits. They come out, and they come out, they're all wearing
then
each
they,
other's clothes.
They back up quietly, and then they bump back. So anyway, but
that
what you will hear...
been awesome.
My... Even though the battery was dead, and it was useless, the software that I usually use is good.
Okay.
The phone that was handed to me... You know, I'm rich. I have an iPhone. Kevin has some kind of...
was it like the Sports Illustrated football phone?
It was a jamboree. What is that thing?
And you know...
What?
What's that thing you have? Jamboree?
What the hell is a jamboree? I'm a jitterbug for Christ's sake. Jamboree.
But, you know, can't be choosers at that point. And I was happy to have the phone, but it sounds... You'll hear in the interview.
All right.
It sounds less than perfect.
You got it. So let's play a song by them first and then hit the interview.
There we
the
go.
The song that I want to play, you guys know that I love... I collect songs with the word ghost in the title.
We certainly do.
And the Presidents of the United States of America were kind enough to give me one for my collection on their brand new album. The brand new album is called These Are the Good Times, and this is Ghosts Are Everywhere.
Ghosts are everywhere. Inside big old bass tones and deep in the belly of a fish. I can't help noticing their pearly teeth are flickering. Ghosts are everywhere. Some are superstars with preformed plastic paste on hair. Driving, hiding behind sunglasses, and I just can't help but stare. In the middle of a mountain in space where it's black and they're everywhere. Wandering free and rushing by me late at night at the store 24. Picking up a box of customized cookies and disappearing through the door. And I hear them sing.
Everywhere, under there, everywhere. This is Todd Marone reporting for Used Wigs Radio backstage at the Muddy Trocadero in Philadelphia. I'm with the Presidents of the United States of America, the band, that is, not the Disneyland Robotronics. Thanks so much for joining us both in Philadelphia to perform and chatting with us ahead of the show. Thanks so much.
You are physically welcome.
Now, you guys, the band was born, if I'm not mistaken, in the early 90s out of Seattle. And I have to assume that to kind of create an alternative rock band in Seattle at that time was like the path. I mean, there was so much going on in Seattle with alternative rock. And John Lennon often said, you know, he was a musician because he was born and raised at that time period in Liverpool. But if he was somewhere else, someplace else, somebody else, he could have just soon been a poet or an artist. Do you feel like it was a lot about the environment and where you grew up or where you were at the time?
Everybody that I knew was already in a band a couple of years before we started anyway. It was a required regulation that you had to compel starting from probably 89 or so.
Hi. Almost like lettering in high school. Like you had to be an athlete of some caliber. Yeah. And I think what you guys are very well known for is the very smart kind of many of the songs are very lighthearted. Is there a certain band or a certain artist like you consider Frank Zappa as the granddaddy of poignant lyrics, or They Might Be Giants, or who is it that kind of steered you in that direction?
Definitely more They Might Be Giants than Frank Zappa. I can't stand Frank.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Makes my skin crawl. My brother used to play it when I was a kid, and I just wanted to tear his head off. No offense to Frank Zappa fans, but...
Jason and I can't really, you know, I don't, not on and on until the break of dawn, but here and there, we're not going to sing it, because the only lyrics we ever sing are the dirty ones.
Yeah.
but Chris officially anti-Zappa, and They Might Be Giants is one that inspired you early on?
Yeah, well, I remember getting that first record in New York, when I lived in New York, and thinking, I'm not alone. That was a good feeling.
Yeah, so. Other people writing about something beyond love, or at least saying it in an interesting way and poignant lyrics. What does it feel like to have the first album kind of be so accepted critically and by the masses? Is that an albatross? Is that a blessing? Is that a curse? You know, you definitely hit the ground running.
It's absolutely a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
It feels really good.
So you don't feel like there's the shadow of that looming over, and you're,
not at all. No, feels like a license to ill.
And what is the present and the future look like?
Looks like a calendar, a lot of days, some writing on those days, and like stuff like picking up kids from school and playing the shows, flights home, stuff like that.
And family has become an important aspect. I know that you guys kind of called it or settled down for a while when it came to the music for having and raising a family?
That is correct, sir.
How about, what is your opinion, and I'm sure people have asked this in the past, but you now have a brand new audience thanks to a rock band, you know? And some are, I would assume that there are some musicians that feel like people are learning to play the plastic guitar instead of the guitar, and maybe some people are learning to play an instrument because of that. What are your feelings about that?
Yeah, ask that guy.
I don't know. I think those people, if people are going to play guitar, they're going to play guitar anyway, and they're going to look at those plastic things and just be like, man, no way.
If there's a whole generation playing these little plastic weird toy guitars instead of real guitars, that's just better for you, man, because
that's right.
There's less musicians out there.
Like, I really like
don't
rock and roll
anymore.
Yeah. I'm a middle school teacher myself, and I know that if I play music, whether it be from the 80s, from the 90s, from the 70s, and suddenly the kids respond to it, I know immediately it's because it happens to be in Guitar Hero or Rock Band.
That was the coolest thing about, like, when my kids started playing Guitar Hero at home, just watching them be into Pat Benatar and AC/DC and, you know, Aerosmith and all these bands that I was always, you know, whatever, into when I was a kid, but, man...
Are you just missing Pat Benatar because we're in Philadelphia?
No, but that's a good point.
And speaking of Philadelphia, you guys have toured the world, and...
Yeah, but there's only one Philadelphia.
Some might say one too many. Is there is there any, or do you have any anecdotes or stories specific to Philadelphia? Or is there anything that that you love, that you hate about playing Philadelphia? Does it seem different? Is the flavor different than other?
We hate the Phillies.
Okay.
No, it's just kidding.
Yeah, they're fine. The defending national team.
It's definitely more Benatar-y here in Philadelphia.
Oats than Hall.
That has been said about Philadelphia. And another thing that I know you guys have a reputation about is when, if someone were to interview ahead of time, you often invite them up on stage to do a song or two afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially as a musician.
Yeah.
Boy, that's you almost had me there.
So I look forward to joining you guys. So I'm going to sign off and let you get ready for the show. I'm thrilled to see you guys, and thanks so much for coming back to Philadelphia and to chat with us.
Thanks for bringing your podcast up here.
Thanks.
Stars, you were looking at me. I could hear the church.
a new band called The Gray Coats, and that's from their new album, Setting Fire to the Great Unknown, and the track was called Goodbye, Sweet Youth, Goodbye.
Boy, that's a sad sentiment.
Yeah. They are a fantastic new band out of Minneapolis, and I will likely be doing a written review of their album soon.
Well, and that's Gray Coats, Russ. That's one word, not two words. Gray Coats. And where'd you say they're out of?
They're from Minneapolis.
That's so funny, because the first band we played, Ice Palace, is also out of Minneapolis,
really?
Minnesota. Wow. Look out!
And so we go to Shaft.
Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray!
Hooray!
Todd, what are you... looks like Russ is all ready to jump.
I am. I'm all ready to
jump. Look at
him.
He's all...
Yeah, all right, so this... about a week ago, I was out in Seattle for a web designer conference called An Event Apart. And our buddy Greg Hoy from Happy Cog is involved.
How great is that, huh? One of the best conferences, wasn't it?
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was really great on a number of levels. But one of the great things, and as soon as I heard it, I said to Greg afterwards, oh, that is going to be a shout-out on the podcast. So one of the guys, this guy Jared Spool, real thought leader in the field of web design, he pointed out, and he was talking about how he was basically talking about Amazon.
Yeah.
And he pointed out two things on Amazon where they're almost like these items are almost a community in and of themselves because they're so bizarre. So one of them is go to Amazon, and I promise you will not be disappointed, and type in Tuscan whole milk, 1 gallon, 128 full ounces. Right?
Right, right.
That hasn't been sold on the site ever.
Right.
But there are over 1,000 comments on this, and it's all people writing bizarro comments about the milk. And so it's people writing short stories about what they think about the milk. It's right up Todd's alley, because he does the haiku reviews. It's people talking about what the milk means to them and all these things.
So it just started out as a bizarre type of, like, someone that would be funny just to comment on milk.
Yeah.
And then it just completely...
And it's totally just spun off. And you will not be disappointed. So that's one of them. And then the other one, which is now catching fire, is Playmobil Security Checkpoint.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's a good one.
So check out those two links. It's definitely a good way to kill a few minutes.
Now, the Security Checkpoint was a real... It wasn't like a fake toy.
That's a real toy.
It's a real toy.
But the comments are brilliant.
I'm in a Twitter now, and my favorite tweeter is Rob Corddry.
I like Rob Corddry.
He is the funniest guy online in 140 characters or less.
Is he really?
Read you one.
All right, read us a couple.
Porn stars, want to know your real name? Take the first name on your birth certificate and add it to your dad's last name. I'm Rob Corddry. Is that not the funniest thing you can write in less than 140 characters? He is brilliant. Every time I see his little avatar icon come up on the Twitter page, I get so excited. It's very Pavlovian. Like, I think my mouth waters when I just see it before I even read it.
I might have to break my rule of no more comedians, following comedians, and go to Rob Corddry.
Well, you know what? Bump somebody. Keep the role in place. And
I might.
Keep the net total the same.
Okay.
And get rid of your least favorite, because he deserves a slot.
All right. From now, I will be following him. Thank you.
And let me tell you about one more thing. One more digital thing. There's a program called Simplicity. Are you guys familiar?
Mm-mm.
You can download it for free on any of your computers, PC or Mac. It can be used with iTunes or any other music, or many other music playing software. And basically, it streams your entire library from one computer to any other, as long as they're online. And it's searchable. You're basically dealing with the library as if you were sharing a library with a network, but you're not a network. You're just both online.
Really?
That's the first good part. Second good part is for there are additional good parts. For a mere, I think, $2 or $3, you can download the application for your iPhone and have access to your entire library on your iPhone. Third good part is you can be friends with 30 other people and have access, searchable access, to their libraries.
Wow.
And
what does it sound like?
It sounds perfect. I mean, as far as I can tell, it sounds exactly the same as if I were listening to it on my own computer.
Really?
That might not
be
true.
Is this a free app?
It's a free application for the computer.
Yeah.
It costs $2 or $3 for the iPhone.
Hmm.
But so Heather and I have been using it, and it's been really great. And then the last thing that I really like about it is if you can accumulate some friends, and I think it would be great for all three of us to have it.
Yeah.
Because, hey, listen to this song, listen to this album. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to exchange flash drives or discs. And also, while you're listening, you can open up a little dialogue box and see what people are listening to on your on yours, or what you're listening to on theirs.
Wow.
And you can chat. And I don't mean like chat about life, but you can say, hey, I see that you're on. Make sure that you listen to this new album.
Right.
You can tell them, you know, the name or the artist or what to search for.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty
incredible. That sounds pretty cool, yeah.
Simplicity.
Interesting.
Very nice.
Simplicity
Very nice.
Media. If you do a search for Simplicity Media, you'll bang into it.
Very nice. I don't have a lot of shots. I barely have one, but I will. Something I've been enjoying, and it's kind of off the radar, on the TV network Stars. Are you familiar with the TV network Stars?
With a Z?
Star with, of course, with a Z, Todd. I wouldn't spell Stars any other way.
There's a street cred.
Yes, there's a little show called Party Down, and it's very, very funny. Ken Marino from The State is in it, and it's basically a show about caterers who cater in Hollywood. They're all frustrated actors, ex-addicts, and various group of, like, you know, oddball people together who cater parties. It's very much in the vein of, like, that Larry...
Sanders show?
The Larry David show. Right? Like, no soundtrack, no laugh track.
I know where you were going.
Larry Sanders is great, though. Yeah, oh, my God. No, but, like, kind of, like, even drier than The Office and, like, 30 Rock, like, real awkward moments, real dry comedy, and really, really funny. And
is this the first Starz original show that was worth watching? I've never heard of
it. No, they just had I think they just had, like, their first three or four. They just put out original programming, and it's the only one I've watched, but it's good. And
so following into HBO first, then Showtime, original programming.
Yeah,
now,
all the shows.
Because how can you make a living selling subscription service to movies anymore, really?
You can't. So you have to have original programming, and, you know, and then they, you know, they still have their you know, movies, I'm sure, but it's good. And the thing is, I don't have Stars, but you can watch them online. And that's what I do.
Very nice.
So there. Okay, guys. Todd, two excellent interviews. A little clap for you there.
Thank you.
Well done.
You know what the listeners can do to thank us?
What's that?
June 12th.
$7 only, I heard.
$7. But you know what? For that $7, not only do you get the sights and sounds and smells of used wigs.
That's right.
I'm also going to try to make hundreds of paintings, original paintings on paper.
Wow.
And hand every person who walks through the door, at least the first 100 or so, a painting while supplies last.
You know what? Russ is going to make 100 paintings also. Maybe he's not a good artist as you are, Todd, but he's going to try.
I'm going to make 100 hand turkeys.
That's a good idea. That'll be your worst summer job.
That would be a shitty job.
All right, number 48. Please, give me some more glue and construction paper. This blows. I got a callus.
Oh, man.
Good night, everybody.
I got to tell you that your podcast audience, that is not exactly a podcast-compatible device you're recording on right now.
This is true. This is the backup.
Okay.
We had to go. This is plan B,
so
luckily.
So, Craig, did your iPhone crap out on you?
It did indeed.